Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Well, everybody, there's a lot going on right now globally and domestically, and we want to get into it with my friend Rick Unger. You know him as the former host of the nationally syndicated Rick Unger Show, as well as my partner at SiriusXM's Steele and Unger. He's a progressive who's made his mark in radio and television by being willing to mix it up with conservatives like me. And certainly having the kinds of conversations that are long missed in our nation's politics. He is also a former political commentator and contributor to Forbes.com, a lawyer and television producer. My conversation with the one and only Rick Unger coming up next on the Michael Steele Podcast right after this. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. Well, there has been absolutely nothing happening in the world, which is why I figured I'd call Rick Unger to come in and talk about nothing.
We can make something up.
How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I am doing well. I am blessed and just, you know, as they say, vertical and ventilated. So I'm happy.
Yeah, the Republicans haven't made you completely lose your mind yet?
No. They worked on that so many years ago. I've kind of gotten, you know,
desensitized. I get
immunizations for that. So there's a lot of really heavy, serious stuff, which is why I'm really glad you're in the pipeline for this discussion today, because it is stuff that you and I have talked about over our years together on the air, online, offline. It is, I think it's much a reflection when you look at both the domestic politics around the speakers, crazy, the global tensions, both now from Ukraine and in Israel. This sense, as a friend of mine put it to me very succinctly, what the hell is going on? What? I don't get it. This feels so unnatural. What's your initial top line take on what we're seeing right now in the Middle East? The attack by Hamas on Israel, the response by the Israeli government, in particular, which was at first a little bit like off-putting. It was like, well, we didn't know anything about this even remotely possibly happening. Right. So give me your thoughts and then we'll get into it.
Well, on the subject you just raised, their lack of awareness and readiness, I got to be honest with you. I very much put this at the feet of Bibi Netanyahu. This is a prime minister who has been deeply occupied with his own personal corruption problems.
Right. And he's got legal troubles at home, right?
Big time legal troubles at home. He's been deeply preoccupied with this changing the judiciary in Israel, despite the fact that the people don't want it.
Right.
He wants it because he feels that the judiciary has too much control over the government. He's been deeply occupied with just about everything you can think of except military preparation. On top of that, in order to regain control, people who are not military experts, this could not have happened 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. The cabinet split up with people who knew what they were doing and would have seen it coming. The case now doesn't have expertise-driven cabinet. So all the conditions were there for this sort of thing to happen. That said, the fact that it happened at all was just mind-blowing. Horrendous beyond belief.
Yeah, that's the part for me, the scale of it, the sophistication of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Quite honestly. I mean, clearly Hamas had help from Hezbollah in the north, as well as Iran.
We got to be careful with the Iranian suggestion that they helped. Certainly, you could say they helped in terms of they support Hamas financially. But so far, there does not appear to be any evidence that they were even aware that this was coming. Now, we can believe that or not believe that, but this is what has turned up so far.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. I get what's not on the paper. I guess what I'm referring to is what at least folks that I've heard from and listened to in other spaces in the intelligence community say, as carefully as they can say, something of this scale and magnitude is not something that Hamas on its own could A, fund, B, execute.
But could they do it with Hezbollah? And I got to tell you, the only reason I'm being slightly ornery about it,
right,
I'm very worried that we will, as we often do, willy-nilly go off and lay the blame on Iran, which could lead to some serious problems of its own. If they were involved, that's one thing, and maybe those problems have to come to pass. But if they weren't involved, it would be a shame if, because of the the telephone line, we all decided over here, oh, of course Iran was involved.
Right.
Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. When we get the evidence, I'll probably have it, you know.
Yeah, no, I definitely respect that, and I agree with you. And I'm not, you know, trying to shoot from the hip here. I'm just looking at it objectively, and even saying, even with Hezbollah's help, I don't think the level of this, the scale of this, the ferociousness of it, could have landed the way it did without some additional, at least, funding. I'm not saying that there was military.
By the way, and it could be other countries.
It could, and that may be an interesting side of the coin that probably will upset a lot of folks in the diplomatic world.
If I'm Russia, I'm applauding to beat the band behind the scenes, because they're sitting there thinking, not only did they stir up trouble in the Middle East, which is always an objective, but they may make us forget about Ukraine for a while.
And that was where I was going to go next, which is sliding into the space that says, well, if you're going to look at third party actors and sort of discount Iranian involvement, maybe that discount then is applied across the street to Russia, and you can say we can you know, upcount their potential involvement in this space. The bottom line, though, is that right now, as a colleague of mine at MSNBC put it, we are in the third world war and just don't know it yet. In other words, the elements in the constructs are beginning to be put in place that's going to lead to a global confrontation, because you've got the various axes set up,
right?
And you've got for certain actions that are already underway and engaged, and now you're looking at the impact that it's going to have on global economies, migration issues, things like that. All of these things are beginning to sort of set a global narrative.
I respect the point of view of whichever colleague of yours said that. I would probably more inclined to say that it's more accurate that we are now on the verge
right.
of the Third World War. You know, when these situations happen, the world actually can back away from it more easily than we all think.
But they don't, do they?
Yeah, they do, because we haven't had the Third World War, and we've had these conditions in place before. So, you know, yeah, we are closer. I don't disagree with that. We certainly have all the conditions in place for it. I just don't know that button has yet been pushed, and don't know if it will, but it certainly could be.
What's your reaction and your thoughts around President Biden's response to this? I mean, he's a clear Zionist. someone who is a very strong and vocal slash ardent supporter of Israel, as I think many of us are. I am, for one. I know you are. Again, we've had these conversations. How do you think the president has handled the very sticky and difficult relationship with Bibi Netanyahu, for example?
Well, I'll start by saying this. If one more person comes up to me and tells me that President Biden can't put a sentence together, I'm going to pop him in the face. Because that speech that I heard 2 days ago from President Biden was, and this is not hyperbole, I don't do that. This was one of the most amazing speeches I have heard in my very, very long life.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary. And boy, did it have impact. I mean, the Israelis are even more over the moon about it than I am. It was extraordinary. I think President Biden has handled this stunningly. I don't know what else he could be doing that he's not doing. And he's doing what he's doing exceedingly well. Sending the Secretary of State over there this soon was absolute genius.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. To me, it was just one of those things that you could actually see in this speech the president playing a very sophisticated game of chess.
Yes.
And making moves and anticipating moves in a way that we haven't seen out of a White House in such a crisis. You even go back to George Bush's response on 9/11.
There was hesitation.
There was pause. There was the fog of war, which seemingly fogged the narrative for a while. This was very clear.
It was very clear. And the message I took away from it more than anything else, and I suspect so did everybody else, was him saying to interested parties out there, interested countries, don't screw with us.
Yes. Yes.
That was the message. And I loved the message.
To those of you who are even thinking about it, let me be clear. Don't.
And I think he meant it, which is something, by the way, Americans need to take stock of. Because when you say something like that, should the occasion arise where you've got to follow through, you've got to follow through. And we need to be prepared for that as Americans.
Yeah, Michael Oren, the former U.S. ambassador to Israel, Israeli ambassador to the U.S., said, quote, President Biden's speech was the most passionately pro-Israel in history.
Yeah, I heard him say it.
And when you look at, to your point just made about the president's forcefulness, he said, quote, in this moment, we must be crystal clear. The United States has Israel's back. We'll make sure the Jewish and democratic state of Israel can defend itself today, tomorrow, as we always have. That to me is drawing a very clear red line around the state of Israel. And so then it kind of begs the question that we see playing out right now within the Democratic Party. This tension that among Democrats in Washington, that seemingly they are divided and they're concerned about this outgrowth of support and goodwill for Israel, how that may translate later on. As one member put it, the media is going to turn from all of this real soon. And the only images we're going to see for the next couple of weeks are dead Palestinians. So that's when the Progressive Caucus will get all ginned up. What's the deal with the Progressive Caucus right now? And some cases silent, and in other cases, rather head turning.
Outspoken.
Comments.
Yeah. The Progressive Caucus is doing itself no favors whatsoever at this moment. They really aren't. I mean, not that I think politics should even enter into this, but to the extent that it enters into everything, they are actually taking a no-lose situation, a Republican Party in the House of Representatives who are boneheads beyond boneheads,
right,
and they're going to turn it against the Democrats. Now, good for that one congressman who withdrew his membership from the Socialist Society because they went out there and marched in support of Hamas.
Right.
Good for him. But he's the only member of the Progressive Caucus who has shown any sense in this scenario. They're crazy. I know that they support the Palestinian people. I support the Palestinian people. I got no problem with that, but I'll tell you what I don't support, Hamas,
right,
and what they just did. I don't right. support that at all, and neither should they.
Well, the interesting part about that, though, when you stop and think about it, because I agree with you, and it really kind of opens up a number of veins of conversation for me, Rick, around this idea that you can't be pro-Palestinian and pro-Israel.
Yes,
I think you can. But there seems to be this sort of zero-sum approach that both, you know, the political class for sure, but even among the American people, that seems to kind of drive the conversation in a way that you just kind of walk away feeling, do you really understand that you can support the people of Palestine and the condition they're in?
You know who hasn't supported the Palestinians? Hamas.
Hamas, yes.
That's who hasn't supported them. Let's be very clear about this.
Yes,
Israel
exactly.
Israel pulled out of the Gaza Strip, what, 20 years ago?
Yep.
Turned it over, Hamas took control. Have there been any schools built in all that time? Have there been anything to boost the economy? Have they done one thing? No. All they have done is stuck to their stated purpose for being, which is to kill Jews. They have done nothing. And don't think for a second that they haven't gotten lots of money, because they have. And oh, by the way, as you start to see more and more pictures of Gaza and what a slum it is, let me just remind you that the very leaders of Hamas, they don't live there.
No,
they don't live there. They live in Qatar.
Yeah, they do. That's exactly where they live.
This is all a scam for them. And they're the ones who, in 20 years, you can do a lot for an economy and education.
Yeah,
particularly
given what you're working with from the very beginning. So yes. Putting a school would be a significant upgrade in the quality of life for those young, and particularly you're talking about a community that is well over 50% under 25.
No, that's right. They're very young. I mean, they've had every opportunity to really benefit. And think about it long term. Had they done that, when Israel left, when they no longer occupied it and turned it over to them, had they done a reasonable job in building something, what an impact that would have on the entire region.
So
because now the Israelis, who have a tendency to go over the top themselves when it comes to the Palestinians,
right,
would have to acknowledge, hey, you know what? When they were given the opportunity, they made good.
So you have a Gallup poll that was done earlier this year that really kind of exposed an interesting point of view. It said, quote, after a decade in which Democrats have shown increasing affinity toward the Palestinians, their sympathies in the Middle East now lie more with the Palestinians than the Israelis, 49% versus 38%. For Joe Biden, what that means is having to defend Israel against skeptics inside of his own party, at the same time trying to convince Republicans to get on board with Ukraine. That's why this moment to me seems to be much more fraught than it otherwise would be, because you can see both sides leveraging their issue against the other.
Absolutely. Politically, it's messy, but the blame for that mess goes on my fellow Democrats. They don't understand the issue. You can support the Palestinian people. And by the way, you can acknowledge that Israel has not been very kind to the Palestinian people. There is a legitimate reason to have a beef with Israel and the way they have treated Palestinians through their history.
Could you expand on that a little bit, Ricky? Because I think that's an important point for people to understand. When you and I say you can be supportive of the Israelis and the Palestinian people at the same time, part of at least my answer goes to the point you're making now about the Israelis, the government, not so much the people,
right,
but the government really kind of overplayed its hand in dealing with the Palestinian people. Talk to us a little bit about that.
part of it's for a reasonable purpose, you know, for security. But I mean, you look at it on a day by day basis. Remember, there are no jobs in the Gaza Strip. They don't exist. And so for these people to work, they need to come into Israel. And that's possible. But Israel makes it exceedingly difficult for them. The rules are just overbearing. When all and again, there's some reason for it. There's security concerns. You got to know who you're letting in. But at the same time, overwhelmingly, I mean, I'm sure 99.99% of people traveling from Gaza into or from the north part into Israel to work, they're doing it to support their families.
Yeah.
They're not terrorists. They're not bad guys. They're not Hezbollah. They're not Hamas. And so they make life extremely difficult for the Palestinians in that regard. In other regards, if you think Israel is always concerned about an attack coming from Gaza or elsewhere, imagine how frightened they are. There have been a lot more attacks on them than they have stayed against Israel. Never one as grotesque as what just happened. But there's all those little things that obviously make the Palestinians not trust the Israelis and give people some reason to be concerned. Look, I was a supporter of a third state, a Palestinian state.
Right.
Bibi Netanyahu is not. So as long as Bibi Netanyahu is in charge around there, it's not going to happen. And I think that upsets a lot of American Democrats who feel the way that I do, that
right.
that probably posed the best chance. So, you know, Israel has earned some demerits here.
What has been Israel's, specifically Netanyahu's, objection to a two-state solution, which other Israeli prime ministers have supported and have tried to get implemented, but it seems to be the hardliners are resistant to that. What's, I mean, because it kind of makes, look, objectively from where I'm sitting, it makes sense. But is it exclusively about, okay, this is our land and we don't want you on it? Or what's the narrative that they're justifying this
with? It's not so much this is our land, we don't want you on it. It all comes back for the most part to security. It's why Netanyahu won't clear the settlements.
Uh-huh.
He likes having that you know, that something in between, that no man's land.
Right.
A lot of good it did him, by the way.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But that has a lot to do with it. It's security. He may have other reasons that I don't know, but that's usually his go-to explanation.
Interesting. We are talking with Rick Unger, the savant of these things. Rick brings a level of intellect and common sense to the conversation that I think is oftentimes missing in these complicated issues. When we come back, we want to get into a little bit more politics with Rick and how American politics kind of spills over into what we're seeing now playing out in Israel and Ukraine, and how it's dictating who the next Speaker of the House will be. We're going to be back with my friend Rick Unger right after this.
Facepalm America is a show for progressives and others on the left who want to keep up with the ridiculousness that this country dishes out, find out what cable news misses when they're waiting for Trump to appear at a podium, and also, every once in a while, get a laugh at how silly this hot mess of a nation of ours really is. If that's you, listen to Facepalm America. You can go to facepalmamerica.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Is it just me, or have we all lost our minds? It's a question more and more people are asking themselves, afraid to admit they already know the answer. It's also a podcast, one about people coming together in a time of division and uncertainty to talk about culture and politics, compromise and connections. It's about challenging the norms we've come to accept as a society and working together to find common ground. Fierce and Unfiltered, host Jennifer Horn is a former Republican strategist and party leader turned independent sanity activist. One way or another, we've all lost our minds. Join Jennifer Horn in the search to find them again.
Welcome back, everybody. Rick Unger and I are having this great conversation. So glad you could be a part of it. Rick, the American House speakership went on the chopping block about a week ago as the 8 members of the Republican Party decided to vacate the chair. And as Republicans put it, teamed up with Democrats to oust Kevin McCarthy. Can I just state for the record up front, Democrats had 15 times to vote for Kevin McCarthy. They never did.
No.
They were given a 16th time to vote for Kevin McCarthy. Being consistent with the previous 15, they did not. But for 8 Republicans calling for, well, but for one Republican, Matt Gaetz of Florida, exercising his right under the rules to call for the chair to be vacated, Kevin McCarthy would still be sitting in that chair.
Yeah.
So what is it that we miss about what didn't happen here?
I can tell you what my sources are telling me. And by the way, I also have sources that have asked me to ask you if you'd be willing to accept the job.
In a heartbeat.
Okay, I'll pass it back.
In a heartbeat.
You might get a call. All right.
In a heartbeat.
So here's the deal as I understand it. If you go back 2 weeks before when the vote took place.
Right.
The recent one. The Democrats were kind of in a frame of mind that if McCarthy were it, that they would give him the support.
Give McCarthy support, right.
Yeah, the understanding that what might come next could certainly be worse, and maybe a little touch of patriotism that says a house that's disabled, as it is, it's right. Currently completely disabled, is of no value whatsoever. Then McCarthy went on TV.
Yes.
And dissed the Democrats after they bailed him out on the budget. He just completely dissed them. And they're like, chop liver? We just saved this guy's butt.
He did.
And he's on television telling everybody what scumbags we are.
Yeah, he did. He did
I won't use the F word, but him. Right? And that was the frame of mind of the Democrats. And then on top of it, McCarthy never asked.
Yeah. Yeah.
He never even asked.
Well, I had some Republicans whining and moaning about the fact that Nancy Pelosi had said that she would help him and then reneged on her promise. And I looked at him, I said, okay, I'm respecting you, so I'm not going to laugh in your face. So I'll just say this. There is not one universe that exists created by God nor man in which Nancy Pelosi would go to Kevin McCarthy and say, look, I see you're having a little problem with your caucus. If you get into trouble, call me. I'll help a brother out. That conversation never happened.
No.
And to the extent that it ever did, it happened one time during her first speakership when the hard right was going after John Boehner.
Right.
And she did go to Mr. Boehner, and right. I have this on good authority, and said, if you have a problem, we'll be prepared to help you. And Boehner was very grateful for that. Turned out he didn't need the help.
Right.
But that was it. So this idea that Democrats...
Well, consider the source where this alleged conversation, who told us it happened. Right. Kevin McCarthy! And we all know to believe everything he says.
I love it. I love it. It just speaks so much about where things are with House Republicans right now. I love the idea that these idiots would even sit there and float Donald Trump as a potential speaker. Yes,
well, that was clearly at the request of Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. Of course it was. And again, reinforcing his hold over the party his sycophants then very easily and very, carefully massage the moment. But it does speak to a broader problem, I think, that the party has. And that is, it's rudderless because it has no governing principle. It has no governing core. And it is governed by a maniacal a-hole who is anti-democratic in the worst possible way. And that infection has infected everybody within the party. So what does a minority leader Hakeem Jeffries, a President Biden, do, even with Steve Scalise now selected as the nominee with no votes?
Yeah, I seriously doubt he'll get it. But
so what happens? You don't think he gets it, then what happens?
Somebody will get it. It'll take a little while, but it won't be Jim Jordan either. Somebody will get it. If I had to bet money today, that little guy in the bow tie who's currently the pro tem, I think it'll be him.
The guy who beat the hell out of the hammer?
I think that's who it's going to be. The guy who took away Nancy Pelosi's office, because that was a classy move.
But again, that speaks to how petty they are.
Right.
How performative they are in that, he's going to gavel the house closed and just slam down the gavel.
You know what's truly remarkable? They had a way out of the box. They really did. I mean, they put themselves in a box. They had a way out. It would have been so easy to step up to the mic and say, look, circumstances have changed. Israel. The United States House of Representatives cannot be out of order when Israel has been attacked in the way they've been attacked.
Right.
So we're going to put aside all of our disagreements inside the party, and we are going to pick somebody. Probably be Steve Scalise, because he's next in line. We've got to do this for the country. But no, they didn't take advantage of that. They are continuing this as if they could give a crap about the country. They care far more about their own personal issues.
It's not even just, it is.
Some people who vote might notice. I wouldn't promise that, but they might.
But it's also caring about power. This is all about a grab for power. Look, there are any number of Republicans who will tell you, and I'm one of them, that this party in its modern day iteration is built not to govern, but to be in the minority. It is the perfect minority party because it sits on the bench and it bitches and it moans and it groans and it throws eggs at the wall and it screams and it shouts and it says, we can do better, we can do better, we can do better. And then when given the opportunity to do better, this is what it looks like.
They don't do anything.
So you spend four years trying to do infrastructure. You do 4 years trying to repeal and replace Obamacare. You spend 4 years, building up to a tax cut that benefits no one but those who are less than 1% of the country. Not even the full 1%.
That's right. That's correct. And yet, people will keep voting for them.
And yet people will keep voting for them, which taxes my brain. And I'm curious as to how you look at the fact that right now, in light of everything that we've talked about, the eloquence and the seriousness of the incumbent president in the White House in dealing not just with foreign, but also domestic issues, running against a guy who has 91 federal indictments against him, has been adjudged not once, but now twice as a sexual predator, in the same suit, by the way, is wholly incompetent and incapable of running the country, has referred to Hamas as they're really smart. what?
Hezbollah too, they're smart too.
Hezbollah is really smart. Joe Biden's tied with this ass. What does that say about the Biden campaign at this point? Or does it say more about the American people?
I think it says more about Democrats, if to be honest with you. You know, I've given up on those people with everything you just eloquently recited is a problem for the likely Republican candidate. Those people are still going to vote for him. They are beyond redemption. They really are. Not yeah. all the people who voted for him the first or second time are going to, but basically the majority will, and they're beyond redemption. I'm sick and tired of the Democrats who keep telling me that Joe Biden is too old.
Right, right.
Who keep telling me, but what about Afghanistan? Yeah, Afghanistan didn't go well. Oh my God, the president screwed something up. That's never happened before. You know, get over it and get over this stupid. I mean, I worry about the age thing. I worry he could keel over and die. I don't want that to happen to him. But as reality is what reality is, and there's no question as to who has to stay in the Oval Office. And yet all of these Democrats are geschrying and crying, oh, he's too old, he's this, he's that. Shut the up.
Which brings us to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Again, I'll say, shut the F up. Who cares?
So he's now decided to break away from the Democratic Party and run as an independent. So he wants to make sure he's on the ballot come November. You have the No Labels effort out there with Nancy Jacobs and her team looking to front a Republican presidential nominee with a Democratic vice presidential nominee. Former governors Huntsman and Hogan have both been eyed and are likely in consideration for that. What does the Kennedy bullshit, the No Labels bullshit, do to scramble the political staging, yeah. if you will, for the 2024 cycle?
Honestly, I'm much more concerned about the No Labels potential problem than I am about Kennedy. Kennedy's already complete and utter toast. Even I don't care how he runs or where he runs.
He's right.
And if anybody's really interested, you should look a little deeper into Robert Kennedy Jr. He's done some really good things. He really has. He's been a real champion of the environment, and I right. respect that. But he's done some really stupid things. His, you know, everybody thinks that his vaccine policy is because of the COVID vaccine that so many people turned mm-hmm. against. No, Robert Kennedy Jr. has been against all vaccines for as long back now as I can remember. And that, if it were up to him, my kids, your kids, they wouldn't have gotten vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And the medical evidence doesn't support him. If it did, you know, I don't mind a left field opinion if there's science to back it up. There's not. There's just not. So he is somebody who is a little too inclined towards conspiracy and other stuff. I think his father would be ashamed of him, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't think he's an issue. I really don't. I do worry about the people who you mentioned.
No Labels, Nancy Jacobs.
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked No Labels. I think they're a credible and good organization. I like Governor Huntsman. I do. Governor Hogan, I would be embarrassed to talk about him with you. You certainly know more about him than I could ever know.
All right.
You ran against him, for anybody who doesn't know. Yeah, they worry me because they could siphon off Democratic votes.
Yeah, so that's the part of this that I find very interesting with the No Labels piece. And I still have an open-ended question that I would encourage anyone to give an answer to. And that is, tell me the state this Republican-Democratic ticket wins electoral college votes in. Tell me which state. Do they get Maryland? Do they get California, Michigan?
I'm not sure. Yeah, no, that's a fair question.
I mean,
what worries me, I have always thought, and this might just be me, that John Huntsman was an astoundingly attractive candidate.
Oh, he was. He was. Yeah.
And
I remember.
I wonder if he still couldn't be.
I think he can be. The problem is the dynamics of it all. I mean, then who is the Democrat? The only Democrat, I think, unless you find some former governor or former senator, is Manchin.
Manchin.
And, you know, because he's largely toast in his own backyard of West Virginia. He's, you know, he's a very popular governor, is going to run for the U.S. Senate. His term limit is going to run for the U.S. Senate. He's not going to defeat the incumbent right. governor in that race. So that means he's out of politics.
Job.
Right. So what then does he do? And what he does is he gets on that ticket that provides some lifeline to, you know, whatever comes next financially or otherwise. But I don't get it.
I don't think that. Yeah, well, I don't get that. But I also don't think that Manchin adds a lot to a ticket. It's just too easy. Democrats going to say, well, he's another Republican. Don't you remember the problems we had the past many
right.
years?
Right.
So it's going to be two Republicans. And that's going to have to be the pitch from Democrats is, well, you know, you've already got a Republican candidate. You really need two more?
Right.
that's what they're going to say.
Well
and,
said.
And Manchin fills that bill.
Well it's, said. I love it. You already got two. What, you want a full house? What are
yeah,
you doing
exactly.
here? I don't understand. Oh my God. Before I let you get up out of here, where do you see things? You've got the next Republican debate coming up in a week or two. You've got
can you hear me snoring?
Yeah, I know. But you've already had Will Hurd drop out.
Yes, which is too bad. You may remember this from our show. I am a fan of Will Hurd.
Oh, I know. I am too. And talked to him quite a bit as he was setting up his run and a little bit during his run. But he stepped down as endorsing Nikki Haley. Nikki mm-hmm. Haley seems to be the go-to. There was a big confab of money people. I believe down in Florida or maybe Vegas, one of the two. I don't see much difference between the two, actually.
right.
And they, you know, both DeSantis and Nikki Haley were there to shop their wares. As I, you know, my colleague over at MSNBC was writing a story on this. On this narrative that was unfolding at this confab where people were coming in to sort of get their, you know, get their money game in play. And I was trying to get folks to understand this, the money people have no sway here. This is a base driven primary.
Absolutely right.
As most primaries are. So you've got Nikki has emerged as the flavor du jour. But what does that mean? What does it look like? Trump's still sitting there. You've got this global conflagration underway in the Middle East. Biden is being presidential, but not getting credit for it. How are you assessing the next few months as we head into the rest of fall and into the campaign kickoff in January?
Well, we start by being honest about what the Republican primary is. Everybody who's running in it is doing so hoping for the possibility that Donald Trump will die between now and then.
Is he dead yet?
That's it.
No, not yet. Okay, tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Nikki Haley can raise all the money in the country. Same with any one of them. It's not going to matter unless Donald Trump dies and he simply can't get the nomination because of that. Because I'll tell you what. He can be convicted of every crime that he is charged with. He will still get the Republican nomination.
Yeah. I just don't see that stranglehold being broken.
Yeah.
I agree.
The only way is if he dies.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like I'm
and
being
even
fine.
Then, someone may recommend just rolling his corpse.
It could be. So that's what they're all fighting
convention.
For. And Nikki Haley is flavor of the month because she has certainly been the best in
She
I'm
has
putting,
been very good
I'm putting
at
putting the quotes
thing.
Around it in the debates.
Yeah.
Right? She's been the best. She comes across as very real. And people like that. You don't hear a whole lot about her policies. And that's because she doesn't have a lot to say
right.
about her policies. She never did. So it's the most bizarre time in American politics. And I say that even after 2016. And 2020, you know, it's Trump's got to go away. That's nothing can change until Trump goes away. And when I say change, I'm not saying, you know, my Democrats have to be in power. At this point, I don't give a crap which side is in power. As long as somebody will be in power that won't allow the House of Representatives to be put out of order,
Right, right.
I mean, closed, shut down. I mean, come on.
I mean, they're not in, they're just not working right now, people. They're just not. They
no,
can't.
That's
they're,
it. And,
they're
and
stuck.
I'm not being hyperbolic. If anybody doesn't know, while there's no speaker, there is no House of Representatives.
No, there isn't. No.
So we may need to send Israel, God knows how much money to pay for their Iron Dome missiles. We can't do it.
We can't.
Because it has to originate in the House of Representatives, and they are closed for business.
Right. And the only thing you can get is barely some committee work, and that's it. And because the rest of it's shut down. And
that's because they have nothing to go home to. They need something to do.
Let's just have a committee meeting because...
What else are they going to do?
Feel important. Rick Unger, my man. I love you, brother. It's so good to have you come in and give a few shouts on these issues
always
for us.
Always good. Always good to be here.
I enjoy you, man, very, very much. He is my partner in news making and loud screaming when we were doing that together at Steele and Unger for your Sirius XM. We get into some knockdown drag out sometimes. It was so much fun.
Yeah, then we'd end up agreeing to
I know.
or we switch positions. You would turn into the liberal and I turn into the conservative. It's like after 5 minutes, it's like, what the hell are we doing?
Right. And our audience is like, I really enjoy this, but I just don't know why. I thought Rick was a liberal and Steele was a conservative. I'm so confused. Oh my goodness. Steele and Unger. Rick Unger, Michael Steele, we are still a good pair in conversation, my friend, and I enjoyed having you.
Always my pleasure. Let's do it again soon. Say hi to
your
wife.
You got it. You got it, brother. So that does it for this time together, folks. You know I love you when you do that download thing, and I really appreciate it. Just keep it real, keep it fun, and let's have a good time out there. Be safe, be well, pray for Israel, and pray for the Palestinian people. And pray for Ukraine and the Ukrainian people and pray for common sense leadership that will help these tensions lessen and good, smart leaders emerge to help transition us to a better place. Until next time, take care, be safe, be well, God bless.